Okay, so this is always one of my favorite parts of the year. As weird as it is for me to talk to a camera, I really have not ever quite gotten used to this. And I do apologize if I step out of focus because I do move when I give sheer. But this is, that notwithstanding, one of my favorite parts of the yeshiva experience, which is inviting parents into our Beit Midrash, and I loved watching everyone learn with their parents. And yes, I know, these source sheets are easier than the source sheets I give you in the morning. Yes, I know they had translations. No, I won't give you translations every morning. I'm sorry to all the people who requested that of me. Okay, so the reason I chose this topic is really deep and philosophical, which is that while I was in America last week, I gave a shiur on tzedaka in the globalized world and defining ani ircha, and both times I gave the shiur, people pestered me with the question of, well, do you have to support people who could work and choose not to work? And I was like, okay, fine, I will re-give that shiur, because I didn't give it then, but it was on my mind again. That's basically all there is to it. But I think it's an interesting topic, because it really is a topic which touches on much broader political, economic issues. And it is an issue that challenges many societies. In Israel, often the most politically toxic area that it touches on is the choice of the Haredi sector to remain in Kollel rather than go to the workforce, even though admittedly that's a much more complicated issue because often they can't work because they didn't go to the army, and right there are sort of many levels of ideological complexity to this issue. But if anyone was following this endless election season in Israel, Ravashi is laughing, and presumably when we go to third elections, this will still be part of it, and fourth and fifth. This is part of the political dialogue in Israel, and it's quite a toxic issue. In America, this is true too. There are many sectors of society where there is a perception, in some cases legitimate, in some cases not legitimate, that the fact that the government provides them with the various forms of welfare that the government provides is actually encouraging them not to re-enter the workforce. This is not a comment about any particular ethnicity. It's prevalent in many different ethnicities. Did anyone read Hillbilly Elegy? Anyone read it?
Yeah, that's the book.
Hillbilly Elegy, and then read it. So, right, part of the... It is a book. Thank you. Did anyone read it?
My dad did. I'm glad.
So, Oren's dad will know this. I don't know if he's watching, but if he is, right, it's an excellent book. But it describes that this is a reality, at least in parts of Appalachia, and, you know, that sort of region. And in general, this becomes part of the political discourse as we enter into election season, which in this particular case began the day after the last presidential election. So we're now in year four. If you remember, we have now entered year four of the campaign for the 2020 presidential election. And not surprisingly, the issues of welfare and related issues in healthcare and the like are again at the fore. Right? This issue comes up over and over. Often it is a divide between, so to speak, liberals and, so to speak, conservatives, at least fiscal liberals and fiscal conservatives. So it is, with any topic that really is omed al haperek, as they say in Hebrew, it is worth looking at the Torah and trying to get a little bit of perspective. So what does the Torah have to say? We know that a defining mitzvah in Torah is the obligations, broadly speaking, of tzedaka, or more broadly, supporting the indigent. Okay? Those in need. Okay? We'll teach you English words as we go along. It's fine. But who does that apply to? It applies, presumably, to poor people. Most of the time, we assume that means someone who is down on their luck. And therefore, the greatest form of tzedakah is not to give them money, but to help them find a job, and then they won't be poor, right? Not like give them a handout, but enable them to have a livelihood. But what do you do when you have a person who is capable of working and chooses, for whatever reason, to remain in a state in which they're relying on the community? And again, that could be for different reasons. It could be for laziness. It could be depression, right? Meaning they could work, but like they've just given up, which obviously is not quite the same, right? It's not really a choice in the same way. But I'm just pointing out we could talk about these things, right? Meaning in the Israel example, it's what if they choose to learn Torah? Right, they choose to learn Torah professionally, or, again, the complexity of the Israeli situation, what if because of ideological convictions they can't go to the army, which in turn makes it that they can't really go to work for extended periods of time, right? Where they didn't really choose it directly, they chose it indirectly, right? Meaning there are different ways this could happen, but what does the Torah say about this? So before we look at the sources, what would you think? By the way, parents, if you want to comment, argue, criticize, whatever, you can try messaging it, and Yosef, you can tell me what people are saying. Okay, good. What? Or text your kids. Yeah, you can do that. But what do you think, right? What is it based on, right? What is the question based on conceptually, right? What factors are we going to take into account? You looked at the sources. Come on. You're like, oh, it's easy sources. Yes, I gave you English. Now you have no excuse that you didn't understand the sources. Now I can push you on the conceptual questions. Good. Yes, Gersley.
As you can see, what the definition.
Good. So, right, it could be, yes, clarify.
What is makes someone a poor person? What is the...
And what are the possibilities there?
Right. I guess you could say someone who has no money, someone who has no ability for money.
Right, meaning you could say that the question simply is, right, what does it mean for someone to be poor? Right, does poor mean simply they currently do not have funds to provide for basic needs? Right, or does it mean someone who needs help because they are incapable of providing for their needs, which is, right, sort of hedging, which is saying, well, but if you could do it yourself, right. I told Rav Ashi before that there was a Ram in Gush that his very clever way of dealing with this was when certain types of poor people would come to his door, he would say to them, look, I'm not obligated to give you tzedakah, I'm obligated to support you. And the highest level of stock is giving you a job. And tomorrow I was going to pay for someone to wash my windows, but I'm happy to hire you. And if you would like to wash my windows, I'll give you the 50 shekel, 100 shekel that I was going to pay the person. I won't give you a handout, right? But I'll give you a job right here and now. And if they said yes, he gave them the, whatever, 50 shekel, 100 shekel. And they said no, he said, okay, you're choosing not to take it, goodbye. Right? You know, which is a very sort of forceful way of dealing with this. It doesn't work. Always, obviously, yeah.
I was going to say, if it's being defined as poor is strictly money, then even if you decided not to work, then you would still maybe have to give them money.
Correct, right? Meaning, right, and that's what Gersley's saying. Maybe this just comes down to how you define poor person. Is a poor person someone who can show, right, on their tax returns, I made no money last year, right? So, right, I have no assets, and therefore can say, look, it doesn't matter how we got there, right? Okay, but that really is, I think, one superficial level to the question. But, right? But let's try to push it even farther. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Whether he's poor because he's learning Torah.
So, right, we could distinguish between cases in which maybe it's justified for them to choose not to work. Right? I mean, we could distinguish between cases in which they're choosing to be lazy or choosing to be engaged in something which, right, whether or not you agree with the decision to learn Torah full time, they're at least not choosing to be lazy, they're just choosing not to work. Right, so you could distinguish there, right, because you could say that's sort of a middle category. Right, yeah.
Galina Dedekovsky asks, what is the definition of need? All people's needs are different.
Good. So, need is a bit complicated. The Gemara, in theory, though not necessarily in practice, claims that if it were possible, need would be whatever this particular poor person is lacking, by which we mean that which they were at one point accustomed to and no longer have, up to and including signs of affluence. Right? The Gemara says, in theory, were someone to have once been rich and had a chariot, right, and runners in front of them, and then they became poor, you would have to provide that. Now again, the Poskim note that's only in a case where, you know, people who are literally starving to death have been provided for. But in theory, need is contextual, which further complicates this issue. What else? Right? What other factors might come into play? They don't have to be lumdish factors. What other factors come into play? Okay, let me throw out some that are thrown out in...
Maybe they can theoretically work, but there's something that's getting in their way. Like, they have some family issues.
So okay, right. So this is right. We've all sort of the middle cases. Yeah, all right.
Well, the actual mitzvah tzedakah is, like, how do you define that?
Meaning,
is it, like, is it the action of handing over someone money? Is it the function of making sure someone is propped up enough?
Right, so you could take this from the tzedakah perspective. Not the definition of ani, but what is tzedakah? It's tzedakah giving a poor person money. Or is it doing the best thing in their long-term financial interest, which may not be giving them handouts, right? Because why not? Might it not be giving them handouts? Right? What? Think about political arguments that are raised, right? Why? Darius.
Because they could become parasitic.
Correct, right? It could encourage. That's a bit of a harsh word, though admittedly it is the word that was used in Israeli discourse, right? The tapilim, right? Which is parasites. That is in fact the word that was used. I'm not sure I like that word, but yes, right? That is indeed the word that was used in Israeli discourse. Let me throw out a simple balabatish one, right? And you can tell me if you were going to say this. This is not really a conceptual issue, it's a very simple problem, which is that tzedakah, by definition, we have limited resources. And maybe, in theory, you would say all poor people, but there's a hierarchy of poor people, right? Meaning, so far what we've said is yes or no. Maybe the answer isn't yes or no, it was, in theory, if we had the money, we would give to everybody, but if we don't, then we allocate resources based on need, right? And the people who can't possibly support themselves are in more need than other people. Meaning, it's not, right, black and white, it's gradations, but in this case, priority, right? That would be a needle formulation. Yeah, yes, sir.
Yeah, so, David Shore here, this was a good question, but he says, which also depends on who the mitzvah is on, the individual or the community. And then Galina Daskovsky also asks, is there a difference between providing food so no one starves and providing other assistance that makes them parasitic?
Good, right? And here's, right, these are both very important questions. Is the personal, whatever we might determine about personal tzedakah, is that going to be different from communal tzedakah? And that could go in both directions, right? Meaning, you could say that, how would we play it out? You could say that personal tzedakah, you do or don't. What would you think? Which one is more likely? To which one is it more likely that you would have to give to people even if they could support themselves?
Personal
tzedakah. Why?
Well, because it's in you and I didn't.
Right, meaning there may be, right, a distinction to say that tzedakah, a personal chiyuv of tzedakah, a personal obligation of charity, is not just about the poor person, it's about your kindness, your, right, developing your virtue, right, in Maimonidean terms. And therefore, for you to close your hand, even if the person could have supported themselves, maybe for them it's not the best thing, but for you to say no is problematic. But society is much more consequentialist, utilitarian, right, where they have to maximize benefit for the most number of people, and this is a bad idea, right? So you could distinguish in that direction. Now, you could also distinguish and say, well, it depends, right? What are they asking for? Are they asking for food? In which case, maybe the answer is, look, we don't want anybody to starve no matter what, right? Because pikuach nefesh, I don't know, right? Something like that. But other things, yachol leot. Yeah, David. Okay. So let's start looking at the sources, right? And we'll see that it's a bit complicated, but these ideas that we've raised find resonance in halakhic sources. And again, I'm not trying to come firmly down in a political position, for sure not. A psak, not really either, though psak I may come stronger down, right? How this manifests itself politically is a bit more complicated, right? There's always complexity added. When you know you're not talking about a Jewish society or a halachic society, right? You're talking about culling Jewish values from a halachic discussion and then applying them in a complicated, multifaceted political world. So I'm not going to try to draw firm conclusions, right? But I do think it can influence the way we think about it. People who know my personal political positions will know that the ways in which this influences my thought are in consonance with my broader political orientation, and I will leave that for people who know my political orientation to figure that out. Maybe off camera, like step 3 feet away, and it'll be fine. But this is where people will get angry at me. It really doesn't matter what I say. Someone will get angry at me, I promise. What? But Yako is very happy. Yako's like, I think you agree with me. Okay. What? Look, nothing's safe. Nothing is safe, Kersley. Come on. Okay. So let's look at the sources. So, the first source, and much of my thinking has been influenced by an article that is quoted several times at the end here by Mari Virabi or Wichenstein, which was published several times in multiple languages over the years. Okay, let's look. The first source is as follows. The Gemara in Ksubos. The Gemara in Ksubos says as follows. Tan Rabbanan, Havit. Lend. Now, we've talked about this before, several, especially the guys last year who were here, Parshas Re'eh, maybe not Re'eh, whatever we talked about. I don't know what Parsha we talked about it. But people will, maybe Bahar we talked about it. So maybe Zev remembers. The paradigm of tzedakah actually in the Torah is very rarely charity. It's usually lending. Right? It's usually lending. Charity is actually almost an afterthought. In Torah, most of charity in Torah is retroactive. Right? The primary obligation to poor people is lending, and then if they can't pay back, it retroactively becomes charity when you hit Shemitah. But there is a difference between those two, between actively giving charity and allowing a loan to retroactively become charity, because obviously a lot of the downsides of charity, it's humiliating, it possibly encourages people to not work. That doesn't exist with a loan, right? A loan which in theory the person is trying to pay back and then just can't get out of, right, just can't get out of debt, right? If you then wipe the slate clean, it's a very different psychological reality that he finds himself in. So the paradigm really is lending. So the Gemara says, when it says lend, ze she'ein lo, ve'eino rotze lidparnes, shenozen lo lishum matana. So, if you have somebody who has nothing, but he doesn't want to be supported from charity, so you give him a loan, and then you allow it retroactively to become charity. Okay, right? This is right why Chazal think that loans are better. Right? I mean, not everyone wants charity, and therefore, we prefer loans, which we hope are paid back, but if they're not, that's a better model. Retroactive charity. Ha'avitenu, ze sheyesh lo v'inerot l'dvarnet, shenozen lo b'shum matana, v'chozen v'ifran, hemenu l'achar mitzah. Then there's other cases in which he doesn't want to take charity, so you lend him money, and then you pay back from his estate after death. Rabbi Yehuda, v'chachamim omrim yesh lo v'inerot ze. This is someone who has money. Sorry. The second case that the Gemara introduces is, what if someone has money, but he doesn't want to use his money? Right, he's just a miser, he wants to leave his money in the bank, so he says, look, if you don't give me money, I'm going on a hunger strike. Right, I want to keep my money in the bank, so give me money, give me food, or I'll die, and that'll be on your head. Right, so Rabbi Yehuda says, you still have to give him money, but you collect it from his estate after death. Right, meaning, we don't want him to die, but we also are not going to let anyone get away with that, so... Right, give him from the public coffers, and then, you know, after death, tell his heirs, look, that's not the money that you deserve, right? Your father should have been spending his own money, you know, pay up.
This is not going to go to work.
What? Well, that's the benefit of coercive powers. The Chachamim Amrim, Yesh lo v'ino rotze lizbarnez in his kakin lo. But the Chachamim say, no, someone has money, he doesn't want to use it, he wants you to support him. So let him starve. Whatever. If he gets hungry enough, right, he'll tap into his resources. If he doesn't, he'll die. It's not your problem, right? Essentially, that's what the Chachamim say. Now, Shulchan Aruch rules on this in number 2. Ashir hamar iv atzmo v'ino tzarat b'mamono shel yochal mimenu in meshkichin bo. If a rich person, starves himself, and he is miserly about his assets, and he doesn't want to eat them, so ignore him. Ignore him. Okay. So, does this source prove anything? Does it prove anything about our question?
I mean, it seems to be say, at least in a case where the person has money already and doesn't use it, we don't need to help him.
Good. Does that prove anything about our case? Let's go to Gersley's formulation before, right?
That it would seem that someone's not money if they have, or not Chacham, at least, if they have resources.
Right, meaning, but does this answer our question? What about someone who really doesn't have resources, they could get resources? Is it the same question?
No.
Not obviously, right? Meaning, here, maybe the reason you don't support him is because he's not poor, right? The radical position here is actually Rabbi Yehuda. The Chacham make a lot of sense, meaning he's not poor, right? This is not the modern debate, right? This is not, he could work. This is, he has $10 million in the bank, right? He just doesn't want to spend it. Do you have to give him money? Right, the answer to that question is no, according to Chacham. Rabbi Yehuda says, shockingly,
yes, but you take it back.
Yes, you end up getting it back, but Rabbi Yehuda is already novel, because what is, right, this is a one-directional nafkamina. According to Chacham, we learn nothing about someone who's actually poor, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, what would you think? Would Rabbi Yehuda think you have at least some responsibility towards someone who chooses to be poor?
Yeah.
Absolutely, right, because he seems to think that charity is ensuring that someone doesn't starve, right? Not providing to those who lack, but ensuring that people don't starve.
But yeah, but can
right?
You also say that the only reason why he's in this situation is
because of, like, pikuach nefesh. Correct. And it could be that Rabbi Yehuda is limited to starving because of pikuach nefesh, right? So at best, that's what we could prove from this source, right? But this source doesn't really go far enough directly to prove our question. Yeah, all right.
Gemara doesn't say starve.
Correct.
So someone doesn't want to spend their money.
Correct. You're right. The way it is understood by Shulchan Aruch, right, based on sort of the history of Pesach there, is that it's talking about someone who doesn't want to eat. Right, doesn't want to eat from his resources. Okay?
Does that mean that's what tzedakah is? Because somebody has
that's obviously the most basic form.
If somebody has
correct.
Food, they're homeless, like,
so
not have
no, you do, but it's a lower level of tzedakah. Okay. Right? Meaning, we give precedence to people who are starving or people who need clothes, right? We go in ascending levels of need. The assumption is that the most basic is food, right? Okay. Now, despite the fact that directly, right, this Gemara cannot conclusively prove the question. Nevertheless, the Marash Dam and Sefer Chassidim, both of them say this in slightly different forms, argue that, no, this Gemara is actually a stand-in for a broader principle. And that is, right, this is not just telling you that someone who's rich, you don't need to give him charity. What's it telling you? Right? I mean, you could phrase the Gemara in two ways. One is in the Gersley way, which is just, right, tzedakah requires a poor person. The question is, who's poor? This person clearly isn't poor according to any definition. Right? But the Marash Dam doesn't take it that way. He says, no. The principle in this Gemara is that tzedakah only goes to those who need it. And that's the principle. And if you formulate the lumdus that way, then what's the conclusion? Does this Gemara speak to our issue?
Yeah.
Possibly. Possibly. Right? Depending on how you define need. But you both tend towards yes, which is the position of the Marash Dam, which, obviously, why I put it there. Right, the Marash Dam takes that position. So you look, he says, "Ein chiluk bein mi sheyesh lo bein rotzei les barnes, mi sheein lo ma'ot bein ve'achol les barnes ma'akom acher ve'achol manut oschora." He says there is no difference between someone who has assets he doesn't want to spend and someone who has the ability to gain assets. Now there is an intuitive logic to this, right? In addition to the nice lumdus, there's an intuitive logic to it, which is, right, how many people consider someone poor who says, look, I have no liquid cash because I've invested my $17 billion, right, in a very lucrative, right, IPO, right, which next week I'm almost convinced will triple my wealth, right, to a nice, to a cool $51 billion, but my last one, I put every penny, right, so you'll say, idiot, right, like, right, so liquidate, you know, 1%, like, you know, like 1%, you'll be fine, right? Like, you know, there is a logic to this, which is, or somebody who makes, you know, or a high paid lawyer, Naniach, who makes $1,000 an hour and says, look, I have no liquid cash, but I have a customer, you know, I have a client coming in right now for a 3-hour meeting, right? So you could say, oh, he has no money right now. I need to buy him lunch. Or you could say, so get lunch after your meeting and take me with you. Right? And like, right, there is a logic to that, right? So the Marashdam actually, right, it's not just like, it's not like a leap. I mean, it is a slight leap, but it's not a leap that doesn't have basis. And then he continues, let's finish the piece, and he writes, said, how many people do you know who don't have liquid cash right now, but they have a good job? Right? He said, they are the ones who should be supported by the rich? Right? He's like, the handful of grain could not satisfy the lion, right? This is just a metaphor. But the point is, you can't go around telling me that all those people who choose to tie up all their resources in investments because they know they're going to make $1,000 an hour, that in between that moment where they tied up all their assets in investments and then they work again for an hour, that at that moment they're poor. Right? There's a logic to say that person is not poor, it doesn't need you. Right? Yeah.
Is he referring to, I guess, a person who's still very expensive and worthwhile assets, but just doesn't have...
Who steals? What?
A person who has... you're saying that he has assets.
No, so he's not... I'm sort of... That's for illustration. But no, he's talking about... Let's say someone who literally has no money right now.
Yes,
he has no money. Why he has no money, I don't know. Right? He spent it on a big vacation, right? Okay, well, let's say what he's really talking about. Fine. Yesterday he had $1 million. Okay, fine. He makes $10,000 an hour. Therefore, he had no problem blowing his $1 million on a super fancy 3-day vacation. I don't know what he was doing. He was spending $333,000 a day, but kacha, right? Kachafa. Okay? And now after the vacation, he says, well, I have no money, right? So you say to him, that's very nice. Go back to work, right? Right? Okay, we'll leave the assets aside because then we're in the first case. Fine. There is an intuitive logic to this. But the Lumdish claim, the conceptual claim that Marashdam makes, is that what we learned in this Gemara is not, as Gerstle said, which is the question that is relevant here is how you define a poor person. Someone who has no money or someone who is in need, right? The question is, right, are you obligated, right, the question is slightly broader. Right, and what he derives from this is that anyone who is in need, right? It's about need, not defining poor person. Right? It's about defining need. And anyone who's in need, so you have to support. But if someone isn't in need, right, then despite the fact that now they are penniless, right, that's not the issue. Right? The issue, according to him, is that staka is about providing needs. Okay? That's one model. Now, based on this, someone who could work, you don't have to support. Now, again, this gets tricky, right? We're exaggerating for conceptual clarity that someone who can make $10,000 an hour, that person doesn't need it. Is it the same thing if someone has the potential to work a minimum wage job and it will take them 8 hours, right, to work, to scrape together enough that they could get food, right? Is that person the person we're talking about, right? You could see a distinction between those. Right? Or what about someone who has a minimum wage job and can't make ends meet and could theoretically retrain and get a better job, right? I mean, there are middle cases here, right, where you're going to say that's less black and white, right? Right? Does it depend on whether they're in the middle of training and therefore they're trying and right now they really are, right? And to be fair, everything I'm saying is part of the legislative debates that you hear all the time, right? Right? Should we expand welfare? Or should we not expand welfare, but we should expand unemployment benefits to allow people to look for a high-paying job and not replace their good-paying job with a minimum wage job, right? Things like that, right? Okay. But that's one model. On the other hand, the smock seems to not hold that way. The smock, Sefer Mitzvah Ketana, Moshe Mikutzi, writes... Did I get that right? No. Shelo Yomar, Ma Lanu L'Sayeya L'Ploni, don't say, why should I help such and such? Why should we help him? If he wanted to, he can make more money. Talmud Lomar lo ta'ameitz. The pasuk tells you, do not close your heart, do not close your hand. Shafilu ata notein mechshava hazot, ata over below ta'ameitz. Even if you think this, then you are closing your hand, you're closing your heart. Now, the smock, at first glance, sounds like he's presenting the alternative model, which is, no, tzedakah is about the here and now. Does he have money? No, then he's poor. Right? And therefore you'd have two models. The Marash Dam claims that tzedakah is about providing to those who need, and the Smach says it's about providing to those who are poor and who currently don't have funds. Now, it's not clear. Anyone want to give me a counter-read of the Smach? Anyone want to give me a counter-read that would dull this point?
I guess it's Shlomo Levy and Source Number 5. It's just talking about you shouldn't suspect needy people.
Yeah, I don't know why I give you the answer, isn't it? But fine. Right? Meaning Shlomo Levy, right? Shlomo Levy in an article in Tchumen suggests that maybe this is not forbidding. Right? Maybe the Smach is not forbidding giving... not giving charity to someone who really could work, he's saying, don't be cynical. Right? Meaning, don't look at every poor person and say, you're not really needy. You could get a job. Right? If someone comes to you and he's really poor, right? Don't start cheshbening out and say, oh, you're lazy. Right? Right? And again, anyone, this sound familiar? Right? This argument sound familiar? People who say, they're lazy. And other people will say, you don't know what they're going through. Maybe they're not lazy. Maybe they just can't find a better job. They live in a place where there aren't jobs. They can't move. They can't get the friends together to move to a place where there are jobs. You don't understand their background, right? This, it could be that that's all the Smach is saying, which is not you have to support people who could get a job, but don't assume that everyone who is asking you for money is just lazy, right? If the what you see is someone who's really poor, then give them money. But that would therefore dull this point, and therefore the Smach would not be a proof that you have to provide for those who could get a job. Okay. Now, Rav Luchanseen notes, I'll just say this outside, that the truth is that there's good reason to believe that this Gemara doesn't, as we said, conclusively prove anything, because at the end of the day, there still is a difference between someone who is merely lazy or passive. And the person, remember, the source text for this entire discussion was a Gemara that said, if someone is rich and chooses not to use his pre-existing assets, you don't have to support him. Right? Luchanseen said, whatever you think about a lazy person who chooses not to get a job, he's still not as morally reprehensible as someone who has the assets and chooses to not use his own money. Right? That's still a different madriga. Right? So it may be conceptually similar. Right, the Marash Dam is a potential read, but it's by no means dispositive. Okay, yeah, Darius.
I mean, the way the rich person with the means to support himself but doesn't, the way he's described almost makes him sound like he has some sort of mental issue where he's, you know, like some sort of wealth anorexia.
Could be. Who knows, right? Who knows what it is?
It's hard to imagine what kind of problem he has where he's not feeding himself on wealthy.
I don't know. How many people are there who have tremendous assets but no salary, who really don't need welfare, but can theoretically apply for it because their salary is zero? How many people take advantage of that? I don't know, but I assume the number is not zero. Okay? I don't know what it is, right? But I assume it's not zero. Right? Meaning, it could be someone who's, you know, has a right real psychological problem, or it could just be someone who's greedy and has found a loophole in the system. It's like, right, in a society where you judge things more on, like, you know, I mean, think about it, right? There are people, right, there's a, you know, there are these, right, this is one of those things that, if you follow the American debates, people are very angry about, is that people who are fabulously wealthy can get away with paying no taxes because this year they counted a loss. Right? Because they invested billions of dollars in R&D, or they, you know, they made $5 billion last year and lost $3 billion this year, whatever, right? Right? In a chanami, right? Meaning, again, without weighing in on it, you see that part of the debate sometimes is, right, is it right for people to put themselves in a situation where they don't really need charity or tax breaks, right? But they could justify it legally, right? Meaning, it's a similar conceptual, political question, not identical, obviously. Right in the Torah, right? The Torah. Let's just make it clear that need is not defined by your most recent, right, tax year salary. That's not true. It's about assets, right? That should be clear. Okay. So let's try a second model. Okay? This is a halacha that does that's not directly about tzedaka, but it might provide a conceptual model. The Gemara in Bava Metzia introduces the following halacha. There is a mitzvah of loading and unloading an animal, or have you seen an animal collapsing? So what happens? The Gemara says, you are a wonderful person. Who wants to be my tzaddik? Someone choose. No one wants to be the tzaddik. Okay, good. Gersley. Has been my tzaddik, okay? So Gersley sees someone whose animal is collapsing. And he says, oh, the right thing for me to do is to go and help him. So Gersley walks over, and I won't choose any of you to be the non-tzaddik in this case. Okay, Zev wants to be. Fine. And Zev says, Gersley, I know that you want to just say do exactly what it says in the Rambam. So the Rambam says, you have a chiyuv to load my animal. I don't have a chiyuv to load my animal. You have to load the animal of your fellow. I'm not my own fellow. I'm going to sit back and learn. Do me a favor and load my animal. It's your mitzvah. What does the Gemara say? Patur. Shneemar. Imo. Right? No, because the mitzvah is to help with him, not to let someone to take advantage of you. Right? Not to make someone a frayer because he relies on, because he's from, right? Do all my work for me because it's a mitzvah, right? That's not what we're talking about. Now, the Kli Yakar takes this, right, or Shlomo Ephraim Lunshitz takes this as a model for Kol HaTorah Kula. And he says, this isn't a localized halacha. This is a principle in Chesed, which is, one is only chayiv in any mitzvah Chesed if the other person at least tries. But if someone is going to take advantage of other people's obligation and mitzvot, right, this is something that Rosh Shlomo Zalman comes back to over and over again, right? Rosh Shlomo Zalman has this conviction in many different shuvot that it's just a chilul Hashem. It is the ultimate desecration of the Torah system if the Torah could be weaponized in that way, right? That someone could take advantage of you, right, by saying, you are chayav to let me whatever, right? He argues that this is, for example, what's behind the halach of Baba Machteret, right? Baba Machteret, if someone breaks into my house, the way the Gemara phrases it, right, to Machloket Rishonim, but at least the way the Aramah phrases it, is that the cycle is like this. You are not going to give up your money, and therefore the robber is going to come armed, and therefore you're allowed to kill him. So Shlomo Zalman says, I don't understand, right? According to this logic, who's the initiator of the violence? The Balabayit. So why can you do that? And his answer is, because the alternative is that the Torah is saying that the robber can use the fact, right, that you're not going to initiate, right, self-protection as a reason to force you to give up all your money. Right? He'll come in with a gun and say, oh, you have to give me all your money, because if you try to defend yourself, you'll create a situation of Pekuach Nefesh, right, of a Rodev, right? But the Torah can't do that. You can't let the rules of the Torah cripple the people who keep the Torah. It's just, right, it's unfathomable. It's unfathomable. Right? Right, he has another case, like, can you, right, he says, same reason, why is it, conceptually, that every person, right, I lend somebody money, and now it comes to a case of a shvua, right, they have to take a vow. Why can't he just say to me, listen, Ziring, you don't want me to take a false vow in Hashem's name in Akitas Chafetz, do you? But trust me, you bring me to court, and I am going to swear falsely in the name of God with a Sefer Torah in my hand. Do you want that on your head? Shlomo Zalman says, too bad, right? It's not my responsibility to prevent you from taking a Shavua. Right? You can't use my fear of Shavuot Shav existing in this world to make me give up the case, right? The Torah can't be the reason. So, this is not quite that extreme, but that's essential to Kli Yakar. Learns from me. He says, "Mikan tshuva al-miksad aniyim, b'nei ameinu matilim en atzmam, alat tzibur, v'enem rotzim lasot b'shum melacha, af yodam lasot b'ezim melacha, o'ezit davar acher, asher bo yichon lavi shever avon beitam, v'karim tagar, emei noten lehem dey machsoram, ki davar zeh lo tziva Hashem, ki im azov tazov imo, hakem takim." Emo. But this is a response to those poor people who cast themselves in the community, refuse to do any work even though they could, and just say, tzedakah! Right? No! You help people, you don't baby them. You don't, right? You help them. They want it, they're trying, so then we help. They're not trying, they expect to prey on the fact that we have a mitzvah, No. He says, "Im b'chol zot lo tasi gado, as chayav kol dam Yisrael l'sado l'chaz go v'liten l'demachzoro." If he tries and he can't, so obviously you have to support him. Hashem shalom. V'azov la'azov afilu ad mea pe'amim. Okay. Yeah. Nate, yeah.
In any of the situations...
You're reading off your phone, so I assume this is your father, mother...
My father.
Hello. Yes.
In any of the situations, does the obligation to give tzedakah extend to the person himself? Meaning, the person who is rich but has no liquid assets.
Yes. Yes, the assumption explicit in the Gemara is that... Explicit, this is Nifsak and Shulchan Aruch, that the first person in the order of concentric obligations are to yourself. Right? That's true whether you're poor or rich. Right? Meaning if you're poor, you don't have, right? You have to give yourself first. You're rich, obviously. Right? Elef pamim, for sure. Right? With a rich person, I don't know if it's called giving tzedakah to yourself, but in halacha, we actually do conceptualize a poor person taking care of themselves of one of the priorities within the world of tzedakah. Right? It's a derivation of the machloker b'kivan ben petera. Right? Two people dying of thirst in the desert, etc. Okay? Yeah. Okay. So, Luchan Sin in 9, I won't read it all inside, notes that with this as the background, right, this is in the personal realm, but how exactly does this work in the political realm, in the communal realm? It's not quite clear, because there are added factors, right? One, as we said, is that it's one thing to say that a personal obligation, maybe, you're obligated even to support someone who could support themselves. But communally, we have to be a bit more utilitarian, right? We have to be more pragmatic, right? As a society, we have to. Right? That's point one that distinguishes this. Second, and this is a more fundamental argument, and this is true even for the individual, and this is coming back to our original point. What is tzedakah? At the end of the day, what is the nature of the obligation of tzedakah? Is it to provide or, shall we say, to help? Right? Is it, or let's think about chesed. Right? Chesed is not limited to giving. It's helping b'chol hamuvanim, right? In all levels. What's the problem with giving to someone who could work? What is the problem? Not just the lack of obligation, but what is the direct problem conceptually?
Taking away from others.
So that's the first question. That's the first problem, which is the allocation of resources problem.
Make it worse for them. Then.
Yes, right? Is that it? Right? Certain people are allowed to remain in situations in which they are non-productive members of society because there's enough money for them to get by, even if they choose to not be productive. Right? Again, this is, if anyone's following the political argument, right? The political debates right now, this is maybe not a correct argument against, but definitely one of the arguments that's raised against the proposal of UBI. You're staring blankly. I don't even live in America, people. Come on, right? Universal basic income, right? Universal basic income, right? Negative income tax, okay? Whatever you want to call it, right? What? I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just saying, right? Dafka Milton Friedman, the father of libertarian, you know, whatever.
He negative income tax.
Correct. He actually supported a version of this, the negative income tax, and not the fine. Yes, yes, yes. I do know my economics. I like economics. Fine. We will leave that for another time. So it's actually more complicated. But one of the arguments raised against it is, what are you giving someone a salary for no reason? Right? And Reb Lichtenstein notes that if you realize that part of tzedakah is not just supporting someone, but in a holistic perspective, helping them, then giving them money might, right, just giving handouts when they could work is actually driving them further into debt. You read, right? You read any of these biographies of people who grew up in a society, right? Half the time, the reason they write the biography, autobiography, is that they had some traumatic event that pushed them out of it because they couldn't rely on whatever, and therefore they were forced to whatever, right? They were forced to, you know, join the army, right? So they would get supported by the army, right? And that gave them the, right, the ability to realize they could do things, and v'chule, going back to the Hillbilly Elegy. Again, it's a good book. You should read it. Suggested. it also was like bestseller on the New York Times since like it was written. Then Rav Lichtenstein goes further. This is not just a practical thing. This is a moral claim. Right? There's not just a psychological point, which is that our obligations towards people are moral. And if we think there's a moral problem with making yourself a parasite, then we shouldn't encourage such behavior. Right? Because it's not just that we are not helping you, it's that we're actually feeding into not just pragmatic problems, not just psychological problems, but moral failings. Right? And Shlomo Levy, in his article, quotes his father as saying, yeah, this is actually this naivir. Right? If someone could work and you baby them so they choose not to work, you are participating in this moral failing. Now, the next piece is a little bit complicated. Okay? So I'm going to say it mostly outside, but but because I promised that I would put at least some sources that didn't have translation, I put this little bit of a complicated analysis. Rav Moshe Feinstein really didn't like this. Not surprisingly, the tshuva in which he doesn't like this is a very extended defense of the Kollel movement. It is also not fully a tshuva by Rav Moshe, so take everything I say with a grain of salt. It is by far one of the longest tshuvos in Igros Moshe. It goes on for pages and pages and pages and pages. But I never understood why until I read the fine print on the tshuva, which says that this tshuva was not fully written by Rav Moshe. It was written by Rav Moshe when Rabbi Yaffin was visiting him, and Rabbi Yaffin added his harot. Rabbi Yaffin is the person who took the Ritva and made footnotes that made the Ritva and Yavamos look like this, where if you open it up, this is the Ritva, and this is Rabbi Yaffin. Right, this is true of basically every page, and that's not counting the essays in the back that are for things that didn't fit in these massive footnotes. So this is not so surprising, but whoever said it, Rav Moshe or Biafin, I don't know. Here's an interesting argument he makes, okay? The Gemara says the following. Are you allowed to take matnot aniyim on behalf of a poor person? So, Rabbi Eliezer claims yes. Why? Because Rabbi Eliezer said, look, in theory, a rich person, so the halacha is as follows. You can't be mezakeh to someone, meaning you can't pick something up and give it legally to somebody, not give it, acquire it on behalf of somebody else, unless you yourself have the legal capability of acquiring it. Is that clear? Okay. So you might have thought that a rich person can't pick up matnot aniyim, right? All the food in the field for the poor people on behalf of a poor person because he's not poor. And therefore he doesn't have the legal capability of acquiring it. But Rabbi Eliezer says it's not true because a rich person is always a poor person in potential because if he wanted to, he could be mafgir his property. He could relinquish all of his property, become poor. And therefore Moshe or Biafin or whoever is saying it proves that what you see from here is that halacha doesn't care. All we care about is are you poor? If the answer is you are poor, so then that's it. Right, you're poor, it doesn't matter that, right? Because clearly in that case, we're talking about someone who was rich a moment ago and actively relinquished all his property. Is he responsible for what happened? Absolutely. Right? He made himself a burden on society, and yet we say he is capable of taking tzedakah. Now there's many ways to respond to Rav Moshe there. Right? One is to note that, first of all, matnot aniyim as the nitziv note might be different than regular tzedakah. It might be more expansive in terms of who's allowed to take it, because we allow workers to take it. We allow certain standards are granted to guests who simply just have resources in the area. Right? It's a bit more of an expansive category. The second thing is that, as we know, the fact that it would legally work doesn't mean it's allowed. Right? Meaning it's just saying, in theory, right? Like, you could be poor. It's just like a technicality. Not saying you can do that. That's a legitimate move to make. The Tiferes Yisrael quotes from the Mari Chagiz, which I gave you in 15, that in this case he's not really poor at all, because he says no one's really going to do this. What they did was they were mafkir their property and then just did it privately so no one saw, and then they went and just took it back, right? So this seems to be much more of a formality than anything else, right? Because we're not even talking about someone who doesn't have money. Right, we're talking about someone who died, right? This seems to be more technical, unless you want to take that as a proof to Rav Moshe, right? Someone who literally is going to get the resources in a minute, but he can still take matnot aniyim. But it seems to be an exceptional case in that way. Nevertheless, Rav Moshe does seem to go more in the direction. Now, Rav Moshe, obviously, at the end of this, argues that this is unique to Talmud Torah, right? This is especially true if the reason he's not working is because of Talmud Torah, because then you can't say he's being lazy, right? He's doing something of value. And again, you get into the complexity of the Rambam, that this is not an ideal, but Rav Moshe explicitly in the other tshuva said you're not allowed to be machmir like the Rambam, right? Rav Moshe, in a very biting tshuva, actively says, right, you are not allowed to say, you're not allowed to take money for Talmud Torah. The elu hamitchasdim mitzachitad haramam him hochlim ba'atzad hayetzer hara. Right, this is Rav Moshe's philosophy. Those who are pious and follow the Rambam are going in the direction of the yetzer hara. I'm just quoting it. Okay, fine. What? Yeah, sure. I would not be as critical, shall we say, of Moshe, of someone who went in that direction. Last points, because we need to wrap up. Rav Lichtenstein also suggests that maybe a helpful model to think about this is that there are two reasons, there are two models to chesed in general. There are two reasons why we are nice to people, right? One is the generic category of v'ahavta re'echa kamocha. The other is v'alachta bidrachav, in Latin, imitatio Dei, right? Imitating God in English, right? So Rav Lichtenstein argues as follows. The more you think that chesed is from the world of v'ahavta re'echa kamocha, so what is the yisod of v'ahavta re'echa kamocha? What is the golden principle? Treat other people like you would want to be treated. Now, you, right, there it's legitimate to say, look, I put in effort, right? Right? I can expect reciprocity, right? I put in effort and don't rely on you, so you should do the same, right? That's part of the cheshbon of Azar HaKamocha. I give to you what I would expect to me, and I can expect of you what I expect of myself. What about God? How many of us would be happy if God said, listen, I'm only going to give you what you deserve? But kindness for the sake of kindness, you know, how many of us would be happy with that or survive? Nobody, right? We say this, there are psukim that say this, right? That we, right, in Shir HaMalos, right? Someone quote me a pasuk? Thank you. Im avonot tishmor ya Adonai miya hamod. Right? Meaning, if you really gave us what we deserve, forget it. Right, so Rav Lichtenstein argues that maybe part of this cheshbon is how much do we view this as mere interpersonal relationship in which I can expect from you what I would want you to expect from me, and how much are we trying to be godly? And you know what? Sometimes when we're being godly, we expect that God will go right, even if it's not really legitimate. He'll give us. We hope that he'll giving things. And he makes two other points. One, obviously, is that these are general principles. But where you draw the line, right? Even if you want to say, no, we don't give tzedakah to people who can support themselves, what that means, where you draw the line, right, is very, very complicated, right? As we've sort of thrown out during this year. The last point he makes, and this is a very Lichtenstein moment, is that he has an even more fundamental philosophical critique, which is he thinks that the reason we value people supporting themselves is because an uber value in Torah is free will, right? Is human initiative and free will writ large. And he says, he argues that potentially one of the reasons that we would want to paskin, so to speak, not to support such people, are because it doesn't recognize people's free will, right? If you think about the political discourse, people who say we should support people who choose not to work, what do they say? It's not their fault. They grew up in a society that didn't give them advantages, right? And what do people respond? Everybody could, if they want, pick themselves up from their bootstraps, right? And Rav Lichtenstein is saying at some level, the Torah has to believe that, right? That nothing is a fait accompli. Just because you grew up in a society doesn't mean you can just write it off, right? And the notion that, well, what can you do? He grew up this way, so it makes sense he wants to rely on other people, is not an argument halacha can quite swallow. Forget the lumdas, right? Philosophically, we just don't believe that people can't choose to change their path in life. Okay? I hope this gave you a little bit of chomer l'machshava, right? Obviously, this doesn't answer the question comprehensively, but it does present the complexity in the issue, right? Why, on the one hand, we don't want to be too sort of, look, you could support yourself, I'm not going to give you anything, and I'm going to interpret that in the most strict way possible, right? Because there is this godly element to it, right? There is a certain, as the Smog, right? Smog says, we don't want to be cruel, but on the other hand, we part of Tzedakah is actually helping people morally, psychologically, helping them get back on their feet, respecting their abilities and free will as a human being, right? And by babying them through charity, you actually, right? That's actually counterproductive. And both of those strains are found. One of them, I think, is more dominant, right? In this case, what is a more conservative view. I do think that's probably more dominant, but both voices are there, and at the very least, it sheds some Torah light on, like I said, what is a very burning political issue in basically any country you go to, but at least gives us the beginning of the values to bring into discussion if we want Torah to help us think about the types of questions we should be asking when we think about politics and economics. Okay? That's some, like I said, some food for thought.